This is what I meant earlier when I said, like sometimes like the things that I've been through are just normal for me. And in reality, getting a cancer diagnosis, like, even if I've been through a lot, it's not, it's like, it's something that's life changing.
Yeah.
And back then, like, of course it was life changing for me. And this is no matter what, even with the high cure rate, even with me thinking that I'm gonna get through this, it changed my life.
Sports. We uncover the mental game behind peak performance. Join us and get ready for the stories of transformation and greatness, powered by MindAct.
All right, let's kick this off. Crystal, super happy to have you here. Maybe for everybody who's listening now, before we get to you and the interview, it's going to be the first interview here in English. So for everybody who's not familiar or doesn't feel that good with English right now, you can jump over to YouTube. There will going to be some subtitles, and you will have the opportunity to also have German subtitles. And then, you can also listen to all the insights that we're going to cover in this interview. And yeah, with that being said, Crystal, I'm super happy to have you here. We were texting for quite a while now, and I actually came across your book in December, I think. I don't know actually where I saw it first, if it was on your Instagram page or on somebody else's. But yeah, I felt super drawn to your message, and I'm almost through with the book now. In Germany, for all those who want to read it, it's called Die Ärzte sagen, du wirst niemals laufen können, also entschied ich mich zu springen. Super, super interesting story, and we're probably going to speak about a lot of this today. But first of all, welcome to the show, Crystal.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I was really happy when you reached out. And when I looked through your profile and saw, the things that you were doing with talking about sports and like mental health in sports, I think it fit perfectly with the things that I also enjoy speaking about. So thanks for having me.
You're welcome. If you today look back on what you've achieved and where you are in your career now and where you started in life, what are the first thoughts and feelings that come to mind?
That's a great question, because I've had the opportunity over the past few years, especially with writing a book, to reflect a lot on, where I've made it. And, when I think about my story and I think about like why I'm still also like why I've played volleyball so long and like the purpose that I've had, it's an interesting thing because, my story and the things that I've been through are for me just normal. And so sometimes I have to look at it like out of the context of me and say like, wow, like I really pushed through a lot. I was really able to achieve a lot. And now at the place I am in life today, I really just think that I wouldn't have made it without the support of like the people around me and being able to build connections and just trust in myself that I could go through and push through and achieve a lot. So there's just belief in myself and belief in the people around me.
Let's jump back to the beginning, also to give people a little bit of context, because as I just said before, the headline of the books is basically the statement from your doctors telling you you will probably never walk normally. And now, as of today, you are probably the most successful volleyball player in Germany, even some of the best in Europe and the world, and super famous for your power and jumping high on the court and all the intensity that you bring to the game. What are your first memories from childhood when you realized you were probably in a different starting position than others?
Wow. That's a great question. And I think it goes back when I think about my childhood. I remember when I started kindergarten, when I started my first years of school. Because before that, I didn't really go to daycare. My grandma took care of me. And so this was my first time going to school. And already there, I had to have like a separate like bathroom and like a separate little box full of supplies for myself. And I remember the first week of school there, you only go half a day. And then after that, you should stay. And I remember I would pretend to be sick so that I could go home, just thinking that it was just like, I don't know, just using it as an excuse to go home, not realizing that like if I said that I was sick with all of my like health issues, it was a kind of a bigger deal. And I kind of think like around this time was when I was like, oh, like I do have some like different things going on, even if I didn't know it. But I also think that kind of like subconsciously, I already knew it because my parents and my grandma always told me the story that like the doctors had told them that, yeah, like I wouldn't walk. And then the next appointment that I go to the doctors, I did a cartwheel in the office. And so I think like, I don't know, like I think I called it Little Crystal, the one who I know, because I don't remember this. I was too young. But I was like, she maybe knew she was different, but didn't care. And so I think that like, also there are moments where like, it didn't matter and I didn't care. But the moment where I really kind of realized was when I started school and like, I needed special things, special accommodations in order to be at the school.
Yeah. Just to give people some context, up until this moment when you were in this doctor's room and made the cartwheel that you were just talking about, what took it from a medical side to get to this point, just to give people some context of what you already needed to overcome in those early years?
Yeah, so when I was born with some pretty severe birth defects, having to do with like the belly, the intestines, the stomach, the bladder, like the whole everything that you can think of. And I also had tethered spinal cord syndrome, which is where the spinal cord is just kind of attached to the base of your spine. So it can't move as freely as it should, which can affect the development of the bones, development of as far as being able to walk. And so this is why the doctors said like, oh, like maybe you guys need to be prepared that she won't walk. So that was the context. I had a number of surgeries already from the beginning. I think as soon as I was born, you know, like they weren't even sure if I would survive. And so I was immediately rushed into surgery. I had a number of things done. And one of those was spine surgery. And also I had my hips broken and rotated. So I had to be for a while in, there's pictures of me with my legs like in these like metal rods. And I still have the scars to this day in both of my legs, where they were just hoping to get a solution to give me a good quality of life, to have some solution that either I could walk or I could have some use of my legs. So no one really knew what was going to happen after this. And it turns out I can do cartwheels after it.
Okay. You were just talking about this at the moment before where you may become like more conscious of you having different requirements, for example, in kindergarten. Was there a point when this like attitude of, yeah, that's just my normal life and I don't see myself as different, shifted to, oh, I am different, and it somehow got harder for you to keep going on this journey?
Yeah, for sure. And I think one thing I can say about that is that even to this day, like I kind of go back and forth, you know, like even as a 30-year-old, where it's like I am completely used to like being quote unquote different or having these issues. But when I was younger, there was just certain instances that I remember. There was one moment specifically with my grandma where I was at her house, and I don't remember exactly the story or what happened, but I was trying to tell her, look, grandma, I'm normal like the other girls. Like I had done something, and she kind of like went along with it. And I remembered this story when I was writing the book, and like looking back, I'm like, did she really like believe it with me, or did she just play along to give me this feeling of that, like I could be normal? And that's kind of the first moment where I was like, I really kind of was really longing for like being normal, or like, and I say being normal in the way like as a kid would think of it, even though I know I am like a normal person. But that was the first time where I really was kind of longing. And then, you know, as you grow up, you have so many things that you go through with being in school, like having your first crushes, going through puberty, like all of these things. And so it was like at every milestone, there was something about me that was affecting, something about me that had to go with my medical issues that was affecting my everyday life, you know? And so there, every time those kind of milestones would come along, I would think like, man, like I am different. That's why it was also important for me when I was kind of a preteen teenager that I found like this camp that I could go to where other kids had similar medical issues. And I was able to find like a little bit of a community, because this kind of helped me also realize, okay, I am a bit different, but I'm not alone. And so it's been an up and down journey, but just having like the right community around me and finding people to connect with that have been through similar things was super important. But as a child, it was really up and down, you know. You know how anyhow, as a child or growing as a teenager, like you go through so many different things as you're exploring the world and exploring, just learning about life.
You were just talking about your grandma, and also in the book you speak a lot about her. And also before, you said that it took quite a while before you even got told by your parents that the doctors may expected that you would never walk freely. But you didn't really know it, and not knowing it, you just did your thing, and you ignored all the outer expectations. How important was it for you to have this surrounding where your closest people didn't buy to the story of you being limited in life, and instead like really believing in your possibilities?
I think this was super important. And it started also with my doctors, because yes, they said this, or that, you know, I wouldn't walk, that my family needed to be prepared for that. But also my experience with all of the doctors that I had growing up was always, if we had some question about like what I could do, what I could eat, like all these things, they would say, let Crystal do whatever she feels. If she can do it, she can do it. And I took that and I really like ran with it. Like I still remember, I can hear them saying, like every doctor, every nurse, I can hear them saying it to this day. And so that's where it started. Because my family at times, they were like, okay, like be careful. Can you handle this? And I would just be like, no, I can. The doctor said I can do it. It doesn't matter. And it was always funny with my grandma, because she would both be the one that was the most worried and would be like, you can't do this. You can't, like, don't run so much. Don't jump. But then if anybody else said anything to me that I should maybe stop, she was the first one to be like, no, let her do whatever she wanted to do. So it's a combination of my grandma and what the doctor said that I really was like, nope, I'm going to do what I want. It doesn't matter. And then everyone around just kind of realized that, okay, I was capable of really a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing which is also like already a huge progress and achievement and super inspiring for you, making this progress to just in your terms, live like a normal life and being able to run and being able to jump and crush all the limitations that others may have for you. But it's a completely other thing to go from there to become a MVP volleyball player. What took it for you to go from there to the high level that you are playing on now for years?
Yeah, I think it starts when I was young, right? I was also fortunate to, when I was in elementary school, to have a PE teacher that was really teaching me about sports. And I had an older brother, my brother Frank. He's 2 years older than me. He was also into sports, and my dad was into sports. And somehow I just had this competitive drive. And I remember when I was in elementary school, we always had to run this mile. And my brother, at least as I remember it, he had kind of like the school record for the time for running a mile. And I was like, I'm gonna beat it. Immediately, my mindset was like, I'm gonna be faster than he was. And I think I may have beaten it. I'm not exactly sure, but I ran a really fast mile when I was in fourth or fifth grade, something like this. And so this competitiveness was always in me. Whenever I could, outside of like when I was having surgeries, whenever I could play sports. And I just tried to play any sport that I could because I found volleyball a bit later. I was interested in volleyball before, but I didn't officially make I played a little bit in middle school. It was not the best experience, but when I officially made like my high school team, I was I think 16. So I started 16, almost 17. So I started really late. And then again, it was kind of more so like, okay, I'm good at this. I don't know how far I can go with it. But again, the competitive nature that I had developed and realizing that, okay, I was good and I wasn't going to let anything stop me was driving me to be better and better. And then eventually I realized, okay, I can really do this. Like I can be a great volleyball player. And once I set my mind to it, I started to have goals and I was like, I really want to push myself and try to be the best I can. Like I found like something that really, really worked for me.
Starting that late in volleyball, like you said, is probably not normal because probably most of the players start way earlier in their development. Was there a point where you really thought, okay, I can make it to the top, or was it always this mindset, like you said before, of like, okay, let's see how far I can go with my competitiveness and this capability that you had?
It started out with just seeing like, okay, how far could I go? Because there was one moment in high school, I had no aspirations of playing volleyball in college. I was just like, okay, I'm on the high school team. And I remember being in PE class and I wanted to get better like attacking. And so I'm there every day just hitting the ball against the wall, hitting the ball against the wall, because that was my way of saying, okay, I'm gonna be better. And so this was also the competitiveness coming out. And I remember in college, because I didn't play my first year. I took what's called a red shirt year, where you kind of were just on the team. And so in the US, you used to get 5 years of eligibility, but you can only actually play 4 of those years. And so if you didn't play 1 year, you took a red shirt and it didn't count against you. So
Okay.
I did my first year to red shirt, where I could kind of learn the sport a little bit more since I started so late. I was what you call like a raw athlete. I needed to kind of refine some things. And then there I was, okay, I'm pretty okay. I'm pretty good. And then the next year when I first started, like I was up for being the rookie of the year in the league. I didn't win it, but I was one of the like last candidates. I had a really great season. And then there I was like, okay, I'm pretty good. And then I learned about what it meant to play professionally overseas. And then I was just thinking like, oh, I just want to go travel and see Europe. Like I'll just find a team. And then as my career went on in college, I got better and better. And I remember the moment where I was kind of like, okay, let's really push this is when I got invited to train with the national team. And then this was my senior year of college. And this is when I was like, okay, I have really pushed the limits of myself here in college. Let's see how far I can really push it. So it was like a developing thing to answer your question. It like kind of developed over time. It wasn't just like I started like, oh, I have these big aspirations. It was more so like being competitive and pushing myself. And then those things came to me, like the opportunities came.
Got it. If I remembered right from your story and the book, is that you went through all those things we were just talking about. You started with volleyball, really getting to a point where you felt your potential or get even more confidence in your potential. And then with, correct me if I'm wrong, with 19, you get a cancer diagnosis, right?
Yes. Yes.
What happened to you mentally, emotionally at that point?
It's really interesting because I write about this in the book that I remember I went to the doctor's appointment, right? Because I had actually postponed getting the biopsy of the what turned out to be the tumor, because I was told that, you know, you're healthy, like things were okay, and I wanted to finish my volleyball season. And so I remember I was going to the doctor for like something with my leg, and I walk in and the doctor says, good news, your leg is fine. Bad news, you have cancer. And actually in that moment, I just kind of was like, okay, what are we doing? What are the next steps? We need to do it, see what stage I'm in. I have to figure out my classes because I don't want to stop school. I don't want to stop training. It was all kind of like this kind of methodical, like just pushing forward immediately. And then later on is when it kind of hit me, when I heard my aunt say, Crystal has cancer on the phone. And then it was like, all the emotions came. And then it was back to just, okay, how are we going to solve this? And this was kind of like the journey for me throughout. I think I kind of stopped and really kind of let the emotions flow only a few times for better or for worse. otherwise it was just kind of like, I knew I had goals. I had a good prognosis. I had stage 3 Hodgkin's lymphoma, which still has a really good, cure rate. And so in my mind, I was like, okay, like I'm being taken care of. I'm not going to like stop my life because I was still feeling okay. And so I was able to keep pushing through.
What do you... we're just describing for maybe a lot of people, it just sounds like you've kind of like in quotes treated it like as a normal injury. Like, okay, there were some emotions, but yeah, okay, what's gonna happen next? How are we gonna treat this? How long will it take? Whatever. Do you think because of everything that happened before that and everything that you already had to overcome up until this point, for you, it became only like another obstacle to overcome?
I think 100%. This is what I meant earlier when I said, you know, like sometimes like the things that I've been through are just normal for me. And, you know, in reality, getting a cancer diagnosis, like, you know, even if I've been through a lot, it's something that's life changing.
Yeah.
And back then, like, of course, it was life-changing for me. And this is no matter what, even with the high cure rate, even with me thinking that I'm going to get through this, it changed my life. And like looking back, also seeing that the people around me that loved me, it also was a bit maybe more devastating for them. And I can say that like what I learned throughout this experience was that I need to take more time for myself for those emotions. Because it's okay to kind of push through and like try to go through those obstacles. Because I say push through, but I also had moments where I was like, okay, this is enough. I need a day or something like this. But I learned later that, okay, I need to feel those emotions a little bit more. Because after this, I struggled with some mental health issues. And I think it was mainly because I did just kind of push through without taking the time to stop. So, you know, to answer your question, yes. I pushed through because I was reminded of the obstacles that I had been through in my life. but it also was a learning opportunity for me to learn how to handle the next things that would come up for me medically that I've experienced now in my 20s and now in my 30s.
How are you handling your emotions today?
I have a lot of tools that I learned in therapy. because as I said, after this, after finishing chemo, I had a period where like I really, my mental health took a dive. Like I was having panic attacks. I had to go on medication as well to kind of control the anxiety that I was having. And I started therapy for the first time in my life. And it was funny because the first time I went, the therapist was like, I'm surprised you've kind of made it this far without being a therapist. And the truth was like, maybe it wasn't so accessible to me when I was younger. But I had somehow picked up a lot of tools to kind of cope. And in therapy, like she helped me refine those tools. And even now today, you know, I think around 10 years later, since I started seeing her, I've been able to refine those tools even more to use them in the like everyday life, for sports, for whatever I need to kind of say, okay, take a minute with your emotions, see what you're feeling, and then do what you need to do, whether it's journaling, going for a walk, meditating, speaking with my support system to help me get over whatever may come.
So do you still work with her?
I don't. So my first therapist, she was provided by the university that I was at. So once I left, I stopped seeing her. And then, so for a couple of years, I didn't go. And then during COVID times, actually 2020, I started therapy again through an online service in the US and went for a few more years. And then we decided that I kind of stayed, quote unquote, graduated from therapy in the way that like we had solved all of my goals. And so now I just use those tools, as I said, but knowing that like I pay attention to what's going on. And then if I need to go back, it's always available to me.
How did all of this shifted your priorities around mental health?
It was a big shift for me to learn about the importance of being able to focus on your mental health. You know, I was an athlete. I was focusing on my physical health in college, that I was like building muscle, trying to be faster, jumping higher, and not realizing that my mental health was also an important part of like my well-being, you know, that when I was having these panic attacks, like I was not functioning like normally for the chemical imbalances, for the things that I was feeling. And today I'm so proud of myself. I can say that my mental health is a priority, and every day I'm trying to like just take a minute, even if it's just only a minute, to say like, okay, how am I feeling today? Like what's going on? What do I need for myself? And I think being able to ask yourself, you know, what you need and what can you give yourself on a daily basis to help your mental health is something that's a privilege. And I think it's something that everyone can benefit from. So it's a top priority for me.
Kurzer Reminder für den Sponsor der heutigen Folge, MyNect Sports. Im Sport reden wir oft über Technik, Taktik und Athletik. Aber wie oft über das, was im Wettkampf wirklich den Unterschied macht? Deine mentale Stärke und Gesundheit. Fühlst du dich manchmal unter Druck oder innerlich blockiert von Zweifeln? Dann stell dir vor, wie es wäre, mit Selbstvertrauen, mit Sicherheit, mit Leichtigkeit und Gelassenheit abzuliefern, egal wie groß der Druck ist. Mit der MyNect Sports Membership trainierst du genau das, deine mentale Stärke und Gesundheit. Mit nur 20 Minuten am Tag bekommst du unter anderem Zugang zu über 100 angeleiteten Trainingsübungen, regelmäßig neuen Trainingsprogrammen, Live-Q&As und einen persönlichen Support vom ganzen Trainerteam. Starte jetzt für nur 49 Euro im Monat, klick einfach auf den Link in den Shownotes oder geh auf mindact-sports.io und finde heraus, was wirklich in dir steckt. Weiter geht's mit dem Podcast.
Yeah, I really like this attitude of basically just checking in with yourself and really, really looking inwards and asking yourself, what do I need today? Because I think a lot of people and also athletes often like tend to overcomplicate this mental game. And of course, if you build routines for yourself, as you were also talking before, let it be meditating, journaling, taking a walk or whatever, they are super helpful. But I think from my experience, in like 99% of the time, taking care of your mental health really starts with just having this daily check-in, or maybe even twice or a couple of more times a day, and just seeing, am I fine or do I need anything today? And maybe there are a lot of days where you just check in and see, yeah, I'm fine today, all good, just keep going. And then there will be other days where you see, okay, maybe today I need to write down some thoughts, or maybe need to speak to someone from my support system or whatever it is, and then really adjusting to your overall best state of mental health.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think the daily check-ins are super important. And as you said, like, you know, like being able to build your kind of toolkit with those things of journaling or meditating or whatever, and being able to use them based on what you're feeling that day. And I think another important thing for me is also that I have to kind of remember is that even when I have like the days where I check in and I'm like, actually, today's a good day, today I feel really good, sometimes I still need to do something to, whether it's a 5 minute, like just breathing or something, just to kind of say, I can't only use my toolbox when I feel a little bit off. I can also use my toolkit when things are also going okay.
Yeah, of course, they're also super helpful to just, help captivating the state and make it accessible for you as long as possible. How do you to jump a little bit into like your actual performance today, if you are on the court today, what's your attitude as a player on the court? And would you say that there's a big difference between the Crystal we may now meet in the interview and would meet around the coffee, and the Crystal we see on the court?
I think for sure. I think it's funny when people have come to games, people who've met me before, like on a coffee, or even when I worked an internship last year and some coworkers came, they were really shocked when they watched me play because they were like, whoa, like me, like kind of the calm person, the kind of structured person in the office, and on the court I'm like screaming and jumping and hitting the ball. But I think one thing that's like fully connected with my life and the court life are these check-ins. Whenever I'm playing kind of, you know, in between the points in volleyball, I always take a second for myself where I'm walking to my spot, and you can see, like, I go to the team and then I walk away and I'm not looking at anybody. And that's my moment for myself where I kind of like take a deep breath and then I turn back and okay, team, focus on what's going on. And so that's one thing that's always connected. But the Crystal on the court is a bit more rowdy, loud, fiery, screaming, like all the things.
Is there something that you specifically do to shift into this mode, or is it just automatically happening for you as soon as you step on the court?
There's nothing specific that I do to shift. It's just I think this competitiveness that I have, like as I'm going to the court, like it starts to, you know, build. The adrenaline starts to build whenever we're playing sports. And you know, like you have like those nerves in the beginning. And I think being able to turn those nerves into this kind of like power that I need to play.
Yeah. How did like the pressure for you within the team shifted over the years? Because in the beginning we were talking about your rookie years and really seeing your potential, stepping into this confidence, seeing the potential that you had. And today, and even over the last years as you play in Stuttgart, you became like the the leader of the team, the powerhouse of the team that everybody is counting on. How did the pressure that you feel, or even like also the mind game for you on the court, shifted over all those years?
It's a good question, because my first thought is that actually it's kind of been the same in a way, with how I felt from, like, in terms of the pressure that I feel, because I try to not let myself feel too much pressure. There were moments early on in my career where in the big games, I kind of, my performance went down, because I remember it actually vividly. And I remember, like, when it changed, now that I talk about it, I would kind of tell myself, oh, I'm not nervous. I'm not going to be nervous for a big game. And, you know, this is just wrong, because everyone is nervous. Like, everyone has some, you know, it's about feeling those emotions, right? And after a couple of those type of games, I was like, actually, it's okay. Like, I let myself feel those emotions to start. And then maybe the first few points of the game, once those are over, then I'm like, okay, lock in. So it's kind of like, I'm locked in before we start. The first few points, I'm locked in, but I'm like a little bit emotional, a little bit nervous. And then I'm like, okay, you're over it. And I think learning to let myself feel this nervousness in the beginning helped me kind of relieve some of the pressure later on in the game. Because when it comes to, like, the important moments on the court, when I know I'm getting the ball, those moments for me have always just been kind of automatic, where I go as hard as I can, and either it works or it doesn't work. And I can't beat myself up over whether it didn't work, because it's sport. Someone has to win, someone has to lose, you know? And if you lose, you go back, you figure out what went wrong, and you try to make it better. If you win and you have this drive, this competitiveness, you still go and you train and you try to make yourself better.
Yeah. I really love this change from you trying to hide your nervousness to really just feeling it and then working with it. Because I think, as you said before, a lot of athletes often, like, pretend to not being nervous, and then it just becomes their way of, like, fighting against themselves, because they try to pretend to be strong, but instead it really makes them even weaker, because you're just fighting against yourself. You're trying to push all the emotions down and all the feelings down. And as soon as you really allow yourself to feel the nervousness, it automatically releases some tension. And it also gives you the opportunity to see, like, okay, what can I do right now to maybe calm down a little bit? What do I need right now? And we're getting back to the check-ins and all the things you've already shared before, to really then get into a spot where you just feel ready for the game despite all the nervousness that may be there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's as you said, like, when you try to pretend, you're only hurting yourself. And when you let yourself feel them, but you are, like, but you prepare for it, then you're going to be even better for it. I remember when I went to national team, I had a coach, and, like, we often had to write on the board, like, our goals for the day. And one of my coaches came to me and she said, do you know, when you write this specific goal, like, your performance goes up? And so I came back. And so now, before every game, I make, like, a little list, and I write the same thing before every game. But one of the phrases is what I wrote there in with the national team on the board, because I was like, even if I don't realize it, it's something that's calming me down. It's something that's giving me a better performance. And so I started to do it as before every game now. Yeah. It's not like I always have, like, perfect game or something, but it was something that connected to a moment for me where I was like, okay, she told me that this is making me better, and, like, actually I'm performing better. And so I started to do that. And so for me, just to connect it with everything that we're speaking of, I do this before the game. It's already a moment to kind of say, like, okay, you know that you're better for this. It's a calming effect for me. And then, as I said, I go to the court, I'm ready, but then I feel the nerves. I feel it. and then I'm locked in after this. So it's a full process. And I think finding these little things that you can do, a routine, like something to listen to or something that you can put together as an athlete to, when you get to the court, to be in this state of kind of, you know, to find a way to reach your flow. We talk a lot about flow, I think, when it comes to mental health, when it comes to performance, but finding these little things are so important.
Can you share the sentence you're writing down? You don't have to if you don't want to, but if yes, yeah, appreciate it.
Actually, it's really simple. It's find a solution. And so, and it's, so when, as an attacker, we talk in volleyball, your goal is to score. Of course, there are situations where it's really difficult. There are situations where it's really easy. And it's about, like, in the difficult situations to find something where you don't hurt your team. You either score or you make it difficult for the other team. And it seems like so simple and so just kind of like generic, but for me, in the role that I have on the team, which is to score a lot of points, I found that, I don't know, like I sometimes on the court, I really think like, just find a solution and everything will be okay.
Before we entered the interview today, we were just talking about the upcoming playoffs of this year's season. How do you feel about the playoffs? Or what's like after all those years and also winning a couple of titles, of course, what's the mindset that you're going in this playoffs?
It's interesting for me because this season has been we've still had a really good season as we've had the last years, but this season has been a bit different because now I'm one of the oldest players on the team. We had a lot of change from last season, and I said in the beginning that when you have like a young team or a lot of changes, maybe in the beginning it's not pretty, but you have a lot of room for growth throughout the season, and we've had a lot of growth. And so for me, the mindset is knowing that like, okay, like what can this team achieve? Whereas maybe in like last year or something, I had the idea like we were winning like everything. And I was, okay, there's no chance. Like we're going to go. And now like I still have full belief that we're capable when we play our best, that we're going to win. But now it's like the journey is going to be maybe a little bit harder. But it's also, that can also make it all the more sweeter. And then for me, as I'm like coming to the end of my career, it's an even more special thing for me to kind of go into the playoffs and something that's been completely different in all the years that I've been here in terms of like the environment. I think my mindset is just, obviously I want to win. This is a competitive nature. And obviously that like I want to finish this season knowing that the work that we've put in across the season has made a beautiful picture.
Are you also entering it with like the intention of like enjoying it even more than you did in the past and even more sucking everything in, as you like said, coming towards the end of your career?
Yeah, I think this is what I keep telling myself, like, you know, as we have like a couple months left, I'm like, just enjoy the memories that you've made here and enjoy making more memories. And this is why I say like, it's beautiful to see how far this team has come. Because that in of itself makes it exciting, because it's like, it's a funny thing to say out loud, because like, as I said last year, like we had a team, or the way the team was performing, you knew what to expect. And this year there have been some moments where I'm like, okay, like maybe I don't know what to expect because we're a young team and like that's the natural thing. But I'm enjoying the moments of knowing that like, wow, like we're exceeding maybe the expectations that we had for ourselves. And I think as a player who's at the end of my career, where it's like, you know, when you reach my age, as you get older, it's like maybe you aren't making as many jumps in your skills as someone who's 20, who we have like a few like girls who are 20, 21 on our team that are making huge jumps in their skills. But to see it as a team and all together and see that I still can contribute makes it super enjoyable for me. And it's just a different thing, but it's super enjoyable to know that I'm a part of this still, even if I'm ending my career.
Yeah. With all the experience that you've now gained, what is it that you're, especially maybe in this season, try to pass on to the younger generation?
The things that I have tried to and that I want to pass on to the younger generation are mainly just this focus of, you know, in general of mental health, in general of personal development, because I think as an athlete, on the surface, people just look at us as like, you know, like we're strong, we go, we fight, we have all these skills. But the most important things that I hold in my career are the ways that I have developed as a person while being an athlete. And that means connecting with teammates around me, connecting with the staff around me, and putting in the work to kind of be the best person, the best athlete that I can be, but also the best person that I can be. And I think as the beautiful thing about athletics is the community that you can build with inside of it. And so I love this message and this idea that being in a sport, especially a team sport, and being able to say like you've built a community, that you went to battle with these people on the court, is something that everyone should cherish and should, yeah, that should stick with you.
Yeah, super, super helpful. I could probably go on and talk to you for ages because there are like 100 more questions that I have in my mind, but I want to finish up with one last question, Crystal. And we were starting off with the headline of your book, being around the story we were just talking about. What's going to be the headline of your next chapter in life after your volleyball career?
Yeah, so I even speak about this in the book, that for me it was a big thing to do the book because I'm a naturally private person. But I realized that I have this story that a lot of people can find inspiration in. And so the next chapter is me. I want to find a way to continue to build on my story and not only tell my story, because now my story has been told and I'm telling it a lot, but I want to expand upon it. And I want to offer just help to the next generation or even the generations that are before me that can find something within my story. I'm now looking into, and I've had some opportunities to speak, to be a keynote speaker, and just deliver this message of never giving up in the sense of, you know, I talk a lot about this in my book, you know, never give up, that it's not an option. And of course that comes with the caveat of like, you do what you are capable of, but I want to continue to give this message. And I think that culminates into the next chapter of my life of being a speaker, sharing my story, and encouraging and inspiring the next generation.
I actually got one more question because it just popped up and then I need to ask it. Because of course, as well today, we were talking a lot about your story and all the obstacles that you needed to overcome. And you also said that's going to be like a huge focus in the future to really extract all the learnings and share it with others, be an inspiration to others. Are there sometimes moments in always talking about your story and also like probably in some way being kind of limited to this story and all the things that happened to you, where you are thinking, hey, I am more than what happened to me, and I am more than I had to overcome?
Yes. I for sure have those moments, and it's a complicated thing, right? Because these things are a part of me. They have made me the person who I am today. But you reach a point where it's like, yes, they made me who I am, but there's more to be found there. There's more that I can offer to others. And everyone else also has their own story, no matter what. Maybe someone hasn't gone through the things that I've gone through, or maybe people haven't, you know, gone through cancer, all these things. But no matter what, no matter what you've gone through in your life, everyone has a story. And I want everyone to be able to like tell their stories and feel that you have a voice. And I know that I have a voice, but I don't want my voice to just be limited to my story in the way that like I want to spread like the ideas from it to help people understand their own stories.
All right. Thanks, Crystal, for sharing, and yeah, for giving us all those insights, and also the insights that you were mentioning in your book, and being this open, sharing your story in so many details, and being an inspiration to so many people out there. I really appreciate it talking to you today, and of course I wish you all the best, not only for the playoffs, but for everything that's going to come next for you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Bevor du hier rausgehst aus dem Podcast, habe ich noch eine Bitte an dich. Wenn dir die Folge gefallen hat, wenn du den Podcast gefeierst, dann lass uns super gerne eine ehrliche Rezension da, gib uns eine Bewertung bei Spotify, bei Apple, denn am Ende lebt dieser Podcast vor allem davon, dass wir mehr Abonnenten haben, dass wir mehr Reichweite bekommen, weil so ehrlich muss man sein, in der heutigen Zeit ist das einfach ein ganz, ganz wichtiger Faktor, und wenn es dir auch wichtig ist, dass wir in Zukunft immer geilere, immer bessere Gäste vors Mikro holen können, dann ist das Beste, wie du uns unterstützen kannst, indem du einfach hier den Podcast abonnierst und eine Bewertung da lässt. Und dann bin ich dir mega dankbar für deinen Support. Ich freue mich, wenn du beim nächsten Mal wieder am Start bist.